My name is Gillian Oldham, and I was born in Cranham in Essex when it was a hamlet.
Could you say the name again?
Cranham.
Cranham.
Okay. Cranham, near Upminster, okay. Which has now become part of Greater London, sadly.
Mm-hmm. And when did you come into the Malden, move into the Malden?
1977.
Did you?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Moved into a very old house that went back to about 1230 and was one of the first houses in the area to take tea.
And was that in Latchingdon?
Well, it's between Althorn and Latchingdon. They call it Latchingdon, but we're up on the main road there, the BO1012, so it's a fast road, and it's the road really between Latchingdon and Althorn itself.
Now, Gillian, your early days, your parents?
My parents, my father was one of the senior execs in Ford's, and my mother was a company secretary. I was one of twins and a brother who sadly has just passed away. And my mother brought us up with the edict we could do anything we wanted to do, provided we had something to fall back on. So at the tender age of 15, she sent us to commercial college where we did shorthand and typing. And my brother had since gone out under the Big Brother scheme to New Zealand, and she encouraged both my twin and I to go to New Zealand, and we sailed on the day of our 17th birthday.
My goodness. Enterprising mum.
Oh, yes. She didn't believe there was much going in the UK then for the younger people other than dead men's shoes.
Mm. And how long were you in New Zealand?
5 years.
Were you?
And when we arrived, it took 6 weeks going via the Azores, and my twin and I landed jobs within 24 hours, and I was fortunate enough to land a job working for a private detective. I actually said I was 18, and when he employed me, because we had to do Mensa tests, I then had to front up that I was only 17, but he kept me on, and I worked for International Private Detectives for nearly 5 years. And in that time, he put me forward for Miss Wellington Airport. And I got through to the last six, and they said, oh, we can't have a pommy representing New Zealand. And so as a result of that, there was a modelling agency who came to see me, Tam Cochrane, and asked me, would I like to model and become part of the Gown of the Year, which was a very big show then going between New Zealand and Australia. Mm-hmm. And she took me under her wing, as short as I was, because I was then 5'4", as a protege model, and they taught me to model. And from then, I went on to finish working for International Detectives and came over to England, when I was 22. When I was on board the ship, my ex-fiancé was extolling my prowess for driving, and one of the ship's crew said, I know a stuntman, would you like me to introduce you? Because I also wanted to go through drama school. So I said, oh yes, please, that was fine. And that was the start of it. And I started on a film called Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines.
Wow.
And I was driving a gate change car, a really old one on the outside. And I went from there in leaps and bounds, because there was only two other girls, one who was retiring and another girl who sadly has died. She died about 15 years ago. But and the guys were very incensed, because they would dress up as the women, and as far as they were concerned, I was taking work away from them. But a man doesn't walk like a woman, generally. Mm-hmm. And that was how I started.
So was there any training for this, or you just worked your way?
Oh, no, you say training. I was very fit. I was very much a tomboy. I did a lot of driving work, things like hill climbing and stock climbing in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. So I had a good background for handling vehicles, which I loved. Mm-hmm. And of course, when you're 17, the world's your oyster, because you think you can do anything. And coming back at 22, I certainly wasn't fazed when I came back. I enjoyed the film work. I also kept my secretarial work up, because then there was like two separate issues. You either worked for major films or you worked in television. Although I did Magnificent Men, I was then asked to work in The Champions, Danger Man, Baron, Saint, all those Persuaders, all the TV. So you didn't do either. You had a group that seemed to want to do major film industry and a group that did television. But I was then asked to go for an audition for Where Eagles Dare in London, which was major feature film. Mm. And I went out to Austria for 4 months and doubled Mary Ewer.
Did you?
Yes, I did all her action stuff with Clint and everything, because her language wasn't very good when she was firing the Sten or Bren gun out the back of the coach, and she would keep closing her eyes and they could go to within 4 feet on me for Mary, so that was fine. Mm-hmm. So that was the start of really the major big stunt work at that time, because the lads working up on the cable cars, 500 feet up, were only on thin wires. When we leapt out of the cable car, we were 70 feet up in the air into 10 feet of water. It, you know, health and safety, what's that?
And you did all that?
Yeah. I didn't do the wire work on top of the cable car, but I did the stunt. The jump out of the cable car, down the abseil, down the castle wall, worked on the back of the bus, you know, it did all the action on it. So that was the start of the first big films.
So were you one of the few women...
It was only two then.
Just you and one other.
Yes.
The only women working in these big films.
Yep.
Gosh.
So it was great. So from there, I was then asked by Columbia to go and do a film called The Wrecking Crew in Germany, in Bavaria. And I'd only been back after 4 months for a few days. Went out to Bavaria to double Sharon Tate on her last but one film before she was sadly murdered. Sharon and Dean Martin didn't really leave the States as such. Certainly Dean Martin wouldn't leave the States to come and film in overseas. And we worked, we were working on the back of a 30-foot high vehicle, which was a container lorry on the base of the freight trains, if you know what I mean, the long things. So we had a container lorry on top of that. And we had the engine that was pulling it, and we were working 17 miles of single track, an hour out from Munich. Anyway, we did all the high stuff, which was loud. I was working with a pilot, landing a bubble-less helicopter on the back of the lorry as we were going, as it was being pulled along at 40 miles an hour. And then I received a phone call, or through the production manager came and said, Columbia wants you back in the UK. I'd already agreed to do another film straight back to back in the UK. So I had two more shots to do for Sharon, which meant we did all the high stuff, running along on the top of the train as you see them, or the top of the container lorry. And coming down between the tractor unit and the container lorry, you have the actual, I think they call it the unit, but you cannot, even at 1 mile an hour, just drop. So we said to the director, or the stunt guy, stunt boss said to the director, we need a ladder from the front so we can climb down or be on the ladder in front of the container, drop onto the unit, go into a fight sequence, and we got 4-inch foothold outside the wheels of the lorry on the freight train platform. And then Sharon gets into that melee, then, as she does in everything there, and then she jumps the coupling and stops the train. It was fine. So we've done all the high stuff. My stunt boss, my actual stunt boss, then went off to do Waterloo in Spain and left another guy in charge. And on the day of this fight sequence, we'd all worked out who's doing what. There were four of us involved. And I was halfway down the ladder and with the other stunt guy underneath me. And the director, Harold Kress, never forget him, because he was subsequently killed reading a script and walked into the tail rotor of a helicopter, came across and said, Gillian, can you take it from the top? I'll get a better cut for Sharon. And now I'm dressed in a little jersey wool suit with a hat tied on. And when I'd been working at the top, I always look for an escape route. And we're 30 feet up, and I thought, if I come off here, I'm going to hit that 3-strand barbed wire fence. So if I come off, I'm going to tuck and roll. Anyway, he said, do you want to show me your rehearsal? No, we're fine. So we all boarded this wagon and we move off, and I go up to, he said, can you take it from the top for me? So I race up the ladder, stand on the top. We've got three coaches with the camera crew tied, each camera crew tied to the rooftops to film going along this track from the road. I turn round to help up Terry. His hand comes up. They tell me we're doing 25 miles an hour. His hand came up to take my hand as I'm bent to help him onto the top. And his hand caught the only overhead telephone cable in 17 miles of track, which my stunt boss had not walked the line to see or gone down to see. I don't know, but that wound, and just before that, the production manager said, I've managed to get you an extra 2 days off. Will you stop over for those days here? And I said, no, I want to go back to the UK. I haven't been back for 4.5 months. I really would like to see my parents. So he booked me out on a flight for that night. Meantime, I don't even know. I couldn't tell you, but the telephone cable wrapped around my neck, but went down. All I knew was I was falling backwards as the train was pulling out straight fast from under me. I'm told, and it must have happened, that the wire, because it didn't cross, didn't hang me. I saw the ground and I hit with the shoulder. And I broke a collarbone, shoulder blade, 6 ribs, concertina in my spine, depressed my lung, and I was 2 metres off being paralysed from the waist down. Bear in mind, I was very fit. I was 25. They sent an ambulance out that had a gurney that was strung from the ceiling because they treated me for a broken back in 3 places. And they took me to the St. Elizabeth Krankenhaus, which the hospital that treated the Manchester United footballers when they were in that terrible crash on the Munich, at Munich when they were taking off in the winter. And I remember them saying, get her mother. And I'm going, no, don't get my mother. I'm fine. You know, so they took me in and they went over me and they kept finding things wrong with me. And I remember coming to, and I'm on my back with towels across my chest. They couldn't do anything for me because I was so badly bruised, and seeing 2 huge vases of white lilies. And thinking to myself, God, I've died and gone to heaven. And it was Mary Ure, Clint Eastwood, Burton and that lot had all rung my, or Mary rang my mother to see what was going on, and they sent these beautiful flowers. Well, after the 4th day, and I'm sitting there stark as, oh, I'm in bed stark as, a very handsome young doctor comes in with a much older consultant, and they sit me up and they say, if you don't have a lung puncture within 30 minutes, you will die. And all I could say was, are you doing it under local or general? As I, because my ribs only hurt and I have a high pain threshold when I cough or laugh. And he said, local. And I said, do it now. And they took out 400 cc's of blood from my left lung. And what was interesting was I had a beautiful young nun, probably my age then, about 25, that I called Angelina. She was lovely. She looked after me, very gentle, and an older nun who was not quite as sympathetic. But Angelina looked after me, and she was incredible. And they said to me, because I'd broken all this left side, keep pushing out your, no, keep blowing up a balloon for your lung. But I kept, because I can't stand body odours, kept pushing out this left arm with it to get it right. And I blew up a balloon, which took, you have no idea, wonderful exercise for a depressed lung. And after 13 days, I said I wanted to go home because the unit were pulling out. And they said, you have to sign your hospital. They said, you really need to be on your back for 6 weeks. I said, I want to go home. I don't want to be here stuck in Germany for another 6 weeks. So they said, you'll have to sign yourself out that you take full responsibility. I said, no problem. So they have made the arrangements for Dean's stunt stand-in, who spoke beautiful German. Mine was very poor, very small. So he came with me, and I got ready, I got dressed, Angela, and the nun helped me to get dressed, and on a stretcher, because they said you must go home on a stretcher fine, no problem. As long as I'm going home, I don't mind. So we drove whatever the timing was to Munich Airport. And they trundle me across the airport to a Pan American aircraft, and they take me up to the steps of the first class section to lift me up. And the skipper looks around, and I'll never forget it. And he turns around and he went, "We haven't got provision for a stretcher case." I said, "That's all right, I can stand up." So I stood up, got on board. I said to the stewardess, "Can I lie flat?" So they got me three seats, not for takeoff, she said, or landing, I said, fine. So I lay down. By the time I got, just before we got to England, she said, "Do you want any cigarettes?" I said, "I don't smoke, but my parents do, yes. They're, my purse is there," because I was in pain now, really in pain. I said, "My purse is there, whatever they can have, that's fine." She said, "Oh, you can have 400, you see." So I said, "Just deal with it, etc." So when we land at Heathrow, what a kerfuffle. I have to be the last one off because the fire brigade have to come and take me off in a wheelchair. And then they're met halfway on the apron with the ambulance. And I transfer from a wheelchair to an ambulance, by which time I am in pretty much agony. And I'll never forget the nurse, or matron, as she was then, I think, saying to me, "Do you have anything to declare?" And I said, bought some cigarettes for my parents. "It's there." "You have got 400 cigarettes. You're only allowed 200. I said, "Then do what you like with them." I don't know. I don't, to this day, I don't know where they went or whether my mother had them. I couldn't tell you. So, but that's, she subsequently, 3 or 4 days later, was very brave, rescuing some horses when one of the units there went up in flames, and she got the horses out. But, so I'm meantime taken to their infirmary there, or their sanatorium, whatever you want to call it. And somebody said to me, "Your mother is in the airport." And I thought, my mother was 4'10" of Tigris. I can assure you, Tigris is an understatement. She sang, and I told, to the Columbia representative, "Anything happens to my daughter, you'll wish you'd never heard our name," and really going to town, because really, technically, even the doctor said to me before the lung puncture, "Many people would have died from shock with your injuries." Mm-hmm. And I said I wasn't shocked, and I was so fit, because 4 months up in the mountains of Austria, Salzburg, you got very fit.
So, Gillian, that terrible accident, was that the end of your stunt work?
No. I was out for 13 weeks, and then I went out and worked on the film called The Looking Glass War, a Le Carré novel.
Back to normal activities?
Yeah. I did.
And no ill effects, no...
I was a bit nervous to go back, but I was stunting with a truck, so it didn't worry me. The only thing I refused to do, they gave us a dummy, was to have a kiddie in between us, which was in the story, the small kiddie. And I said, "No, you know, I want," because I was driving an old Russian truck, "I want a dummy. We can't, you know, if I hit a tree, because I'm going in and out of the woods." I said,
"Did
he wouldn't stand a
chance." Did they treat you more sympathetically after that accident, you know, when you were back to work?
No.
Or were you treated more sympathetically because you were a woman?
No. Oh, definitely not. It's a very masculine world, the stunt world was. It's only in the last, I suppose, 20 years where you've really been... I was accepted because I did that 70-foot leap out of the cable car with the guys going, "Oh, if you haven't got a bottle, I'll do it."
You were good at your job.
Well, I only did what I could do, Wendy. Only did what I could. I knew I could do well. So I would turn down work if I didn't think I could do it well.
So when you said when you had the accident, you were just 25 years old.
Yes.
And you went back within a few...
13 weeks.
Yeah.
I went straight back out to Spain.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, at that age, I mean, we were brought up in a different world. You were really... My mother used to say to us, "If you want to be ill, you can, but it's all above the neck. All above the neck." And my mother was not sympathetic. You know, she didn't go with anything. I was brought up in the country, milking goats at the age of 6, you know, doing all sorts of cleaning out and things. We had a pretty tough childhood. We weren't mollycoddled, and you had to work for your pocket money, something kids don't do these days, sadly. But
different world. So how long did you carry on with the stunt work? When did you finally retire from
2 years ago.
Really?
Yes.
No. No.
It's 2 years
ago. May I ask, how old were you when you retired?
82. I was asked to stunt this year and last year, and I turned it down. But I was asked to stunt the possibility, could I double Joan Collins this year, who's doing the life of Edward's wife, Simpson.
Right.
Wallis, yes. Simpson.
Yes.
So she's playing the part of Wallis.
You know, when you were 80, 2 years ago, what were you expected to do?
Well, I went and I did Wicked, I did Old Guy, I did Slow Horses, and I did one other film,
but
I can't remember.
What sort of activities were you doing in your late 70s and 80?
Whatever they asked me to do, falling on the floor and things like that.
Anything?
You know, melee, you know, getting pushed and shoved aside. I mean, because I've been treated well by now, a lot of the older stunt people, stunt coordinators, they're very respectful and they do look after me and they ring me up and say, we'd like you to do that, you know. And it's wonderful because I also did Blitz, and I was in the middle of the Lego shop with my son in Bluewater, and I get this call, you know, could we have your photo, would you do? And I said to James, you know, really, I'm past all this, this is a younger person's job. Anyway, I sent it to a wonderful guy called John Street, who rang me and said, could you come and do this little part for us? And I said, oh. But we were working in an empty shell, you know, that we'd been bombed in the Blitz, and I'm on the edge of the first floor with nothing around you to protect you, so they had to have somebody that in case you fall off when you fall on the bricks. But they treated me beautifully. I mean, I really was so looked after, and it was wonderful. And then after Blitz, I went and did another three films. But my daughter hates it. I say she hates it. She worries. She's an intensive care consultant. Oh. So she just simply says, I put people back together, mums. You know, you're getting on, you're getting too old to do these things.
So many actors and actresses do their own stunts. Well, I say many, but some.
Some today.
They do their own stunts. So you're dependent, I suppose, on an actress saying to you or saying to the production team, I don't want to do that, so get the stunt lady to do it.
Oh, yes.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
And the sort of negotiate between the actress and the...
Well, I think today it's a question of a safety thing where I've worked on all sorts of films where you have to submit safety sheets as to what the danger is involved, because if they lose a principal artist... It can, as we've seen even with Tom Cruise when he was hurt, it shuts the production down. They're losing many, many thousands of money, of income.
Yeah.
So, they have generally, any action film will have a stunt coordinator, and he will give an indication of what is dangerous and what. And yes, some people will say, well, I won't do that. I mean, that's fine for our industry. And I mean, we've moved on with health and safety and with wire work and the artificial way we do intelligence, the way we do things today, that it's a different... When I stunted, we didn't have any safety. We just didn't for years. And even when the British Stunt Register was formed in 73, you still signed in your contract a blood check that if you hurt yourself, it was down to you. I mean, when I was injured on the wrecking crew, that day I was injured, my contract landed in the UK. And you knew that you signed what we called a blood chit, which I think changed about 20 years ago. But then, of course, health and safety have got their noses in, so a lot of the films go overseas because they don't have to comply with health and safety. How can you say, and I've done two health and safety courses, you have to have them. And in COVID, we had to do, you know, the BSR, British Stunt Register, rang me and said, you have to do the course, Gillian. I said, I've done one. 3 years this went on. No, you have to do the course. Okay, linking on Zoom with the other guys, I thought, God, because guys generally go off the subject with great deal of respect, you know, with their chat away. And because I ran aviation and as a CEO, I stick to an agenda. Let's cover these points anyway. Listen to this health and safety guy. and all the do's and don'ts. And I'm thinking to myself, yes, that's very nice to be able to say at the, when you're on the last shot of the day and the director's saying, we're losing the light, let's go for this. Oh, excuse me, I do need an ambulance and a health and safety man standing by. And is there a nurse? I thought, any production company, you'd be gone. You can't do it like that. You cannot. You either go down and you're aware of what you're doing, or you don't do it.
You mentioned just now aviation.
Yes, that's where I met my first husband, funnily enough. I met him on Where Eagles
so
Dare.
Do you have a pilot's licence?
Do I? No. Although I...
You'd love to.
Well, he used to sit there with the jewels and let me fly.
Yeah.
Yes, so I met him and we got together probably 18 months after Where Eagles Dare, 2 years, something like that. Mm. And he did over 400 films with in aerial aviation, and so we had I was heavily involved in helicopters.
Together on the films.
Yeah, he did things long before me because he was 16 years my senior, like The War Lover, 633 Squadron, films like that, incredible films, Battle of Britain, the Dr. No, he's in the helicopter sequence with Dr. No flying all through there, but all before I met him, before he was there. And then we went on, and after he was killed in a helicopter crash in 83, my son was only 24 weeks old and my daughter 2 weeks off five on SEALS research. I then, the company, I tried to keep it going for 2 years, but it didn't work, so we folded it. And
that was a hard time for you wasn't it?
Yes, it was a really hard time.
Little children.
Yes, they were very tiny, especially my son. And but he did over 400 films. That was John Crudson. I mean, his name is pretty much well documented. Well, from The War Lover and things like that.
So did you had a break from the stunt work?
He didn't like me stunting. He came down to watch me do a reverse stunt, I think it was on the prisoner in a little coupe with the roof down, and I'm down low with the gear lever reversing at 60 miles an hour and spinning off the other car and going into a field. He actually watched and then walked off and said, "You're nutty. I'll never watch you again." I could work with him. I mean, I used to fly under the helicopter in a rig, and I worked on Battle of Britain throwing dummies out of the back of a helicopter because I had no fear of heights. And yeah, so we did a fair bit together, but he did over 400 films, including he did War Lover, he did three or four of the Bond films.
And then he sadly was killed while working.
Yes, we had a main motorhead failure on SEALS research up in 1983. Came off.
So, Gillian, doing the stunt work, you obviously had to double up as the actress, so you must have worn the same clothes, perhaps a wig as well.
Oh, many wigs. And the hairdressers used to get quite cross because I've got a tiny head. I've 2 inches. The average is 23.5 inches and my head's 21.5 inches. So most of the time you're wearing wigs and they've got to take mine in. So I wasn't always very popular. They're lovely, the makeup and the hairdressers, but I can understand that. And it's got to be tight because if you're fighting or falling, you've got to be able to keep it on. The hard part is having it glued all around your face underneath the hairline so that it doesn't come off. That's quite uncomfortable. So, yes, many wigs, many years later.
And did you always get on well with the actresses you were doubling for?
In the early days, you had the actors and actresses as one part and you were just the stunt double. And because you couldn't take away what they were supposed to be doing, it wasn't advertised that you were stunting for them. Very few people knew that they had stunt doubles. Whereas today, we are recognised, and quite rightly so, but it's taken all those years, taken 50 years to get recognised, and that's sad. I mean, it's only in the last 10 or 12 years you've had people saying, well, I doubled this line, I doubled that, I did this, I did that. They don't like it. But now we've got our own setup and many more breakaway groups, sadly, but we've got the British Stunt Register, and that's been going since 73, and they've done a sterling job fighting for all the stunt people to be recognised. And we've had a great fight with the Oscars to be awarded an Oscar. And that's still going on, but it's being recognised now. So,
and would you recommend this as a career?
Today it's going to be very hard because there are hundreds. I think we've got about 600 on our stunt register, and that's without breakaway groups. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, of course, is going into wire work and different rigs and things like that, which we didn't do because we did it for real. So it's a wonderful, wonderful life, and I recommend it to those that are now in it, and I would endorse them with what they do. I mean, when I started, you didn't have to have qualifications. You just had to be able to handle yourself, move well, take a fall, do things like that. Today, they have to have 7 or 8 for the British Stunt Register, things that they can do. We've got gold, high diving, motorbikes, aqua, swimming, you name it, they've got to have it. And it's a very costly basis on which they need to get those qualifications. I worked on a film just before or after Skyfall, when we did Skyfall, with a lovely black girl, lovely. And I said to you on the British Stunt Register, and she said, I've got to spend another 5,000. I failed my backstroke by 5 seconds on the timing. And I thought that was awful. Mm-hmm. She spent all this money training, mm-hmm. and now needed another £5,000 to work. And they're asking them to do something like 60 days as an extra on a film over a period of time and get it signed off. And I look at some of them and I think, well, we never did that. We were lucky. We just got into it, and you either could do it or you couldn't. They don't have any half measures. You either made yourself look good or you looked stupid and you weren't used again. You're only as good as your last job. That's the big thing. So, yes.
So, coming down to earth. When did you move into Latchingdon?
1977.
You said that already. Mm. Apologies. And you were still obviously still working.
Yes.
And with the family.
Yes.
So you were based in Latchingdon and then sort of travelled out all over the
world. Oh yes, whether it was
needed.
Yes, whether it was UK, Europe, or wherever it was. I mean.
And what made you choose Latchingdon?
It was my first husband that chose Latchingdon. He wanted a house with water, it has a moat around it, and I wanted big rooms. And I had kind of given up. We'd gone for a property in stock, and after waiting 6 months, the lady of the house then said she wouldn't sell it. So I gave up looking around because we had a little bit, bought my parents' bungalow in Cranham then. And John started to look around and found the property up in Latchingdon. And he said, I found the ideal property. I said, fine. I didn't even go and see it. It's got the big rooms and it's got the water.
Lovely.
That's what you want. That's what you want.
And it was the house for you.
Oh, yes. It was a lovely old house. And after he was killed, I stayed there for another, really, 14 years. And then thought, no, my Kate had gone off to study medicine and James was coming up for 15, 16, so time to move on. I was on my own then, still on my own, because I gave them priority. Mm. Being widowed, they didn't ask to have anybody else in their lives, and I couldn't face anybody else telling them what to do. They were excellent kids. They've done me proud. They've both got careers, and I'm very fortunate. Just sadly, their marriages haven't worked out, but I've got 5 super grandchildren, and that's it.
Lovely.
Yeah. And as long as they're happy and healthy, that's all you can ask.
And I know that you come into Malden quite regularly, don't you?
Yes, I do. I find people like this lovely lady beside me.
And attractions of Malden?
The water, the river. Yeah. I like the river. I like being by the river. That's why where I am, I overlook the two rivers, the Crouch and the Blackwater. I like the area. I find it's changed since 1977. It's become so busy, and I'm too old to move now. But that's the saddest part. But it's called progress, isn't it? And people need to have places to live and where what to do. But Malden itself and the outlying areas, I think, is lovely.
It's beautiful.
Yes, Malden certainly has a lot of attractions.
And how do you keep so fit?
I garden.
Physically fit?
Oh, I've always been fit. I eat well. I eat healthily. When I say I eat well, I eat healthily. I move all the time. I'm not sedentary.
Yeah.
I garden. Yeah. I go out. I keep my mind active if I can with friends with Scrabble. and various things that we do mentally. So yes, I have retirement is there till I now till I die, and I help my son and I help my daughter if I can, though she's in Bath. So yes, I'm kept. I keep active.
And you still drive, obviously. All
yes. We have to drive where I am.
Yeah.
No buses.
Well, thank you very much, Gillian, for your time and hearing about your absolutely fascinating career in stunt work. I'm very grateful. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you.